This is an iHeart podcast.
The Pete Hegseth confirmation hearing is spicy and wonderful. We'll talk about everything that happened there. The Biden DOJ making some late corrupt moves. Surprise, surprise. Josh Hammer joins us. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, let's talk about the Pete Hegseth confirmation hearing from earlier today. It was quite a spectacle. But before we launch into that, Pete's opening stuff, Tim Kaine's an idiot, Gillibrand, we have a lot we're going to bring you here in just a moment. Let's just talk about why I'm so supportive of somebody like Pete Hegseth getting into an important position of power. Because he is different. Is most definitely different. In fact, he really talked about being a change agent today.
Now, it is true and has been acknowledged that I don't have a similar biography to defense secretaries of the last 30 years. But as President Trump also told me, we've repeatedly placed people atop the Pentagon with supposedly the right credentials, whether they are retired generals, academics, or defense contractor executives. And where has it gotten us? He believes, and I humbly agree, that it's time to give someone with dust on his boots the helm. A change agent, someone with no vested interest in certain companies or specific programs or approved narratives. My only special interest is the warfighter. I've led troops in combat. I've been on patrol for days. I've pulled the trigger downrange, heard bullets whiz by, flex-cuffed insurgents, called in close air support, led medevacs, dodged IEDs, pulled out dead bodies, and knelt before a battlefield cross. This is not academic for me. This is my life.
Pretty good, right? But a change agent. So why am I so supportive? Well, I want to explain it in this way, because it's not just the Hegseth appointment that I approve of. I approve of a lot of the people coming their confirmation hearings, people who I really have problems with, a lot of people I disagree with. So I'll make a sports analogy, because everyone's talking football right now. I think it's the NFL playoffs. I don't watch that anymore. I know the college football national championship is a week from now. So football's on everybody's mind. So picture it this way. You have a football team. We'll make it, who's one of the historically great ones? Ohio State, historically great. And they're winning 10, 11, 12 games every year, always flirting with a national title. And then someone suggests, you know what? Let's get rid of all these coaches. There's some high school team in Wisconsin running this really quirky offense. Let's completely rip out the Ohio State coaching staff and replace it with this quirky little high school team. You would have a problem with that. I would have a problem with that. We all would. But wait a minute. What? Why are we changing what's working? So that's one scenario. The other scenario is this. Let's focus on a really horrible school, Michigan. We'll make this about Michigan. Michigan is hot, stinky garbage. They've been garbage forever. Just a horrible, horrible school full of horrible people and a horrible football program. Michigan hasn't won a game in 40 years. Now, if you say, I want to rip out that coaching staff and go grab some quirky high school coaching staff, well, yeah, let's try it. Let's try something different. Maybe the high school coaching staff will come in and fall flat on their face. Maybe they'll come in and turn things around. But one thing we absolutely, positively cannot do under any circumstances is continue with the current failed coaching staff. Here in the United States of America, our military, this will be about other people who are going to get confirmed, Lord willing, but we'll make this about Hegseth today. Our military fought a global war on terror, two wars, two theaters, for 20 years. 20 years of failure. 20 years without the mission being clear. 20 years of embarrassing policies being handed down. I remember being in Iraq, and I remember given orders that came from up on high somewhere that we were no longer allowed to fly our American flags from our Amtraks. 20 years of embarrassing failure from generals and admirals and these really, really, really important people. The troops being treated poorly, VA system in complete disarray, failed systems after failed systems, trying to win hearts and minds, of course. And in the end, Iraq's a disaster, and Afghanistan is still even worse, and not one general or admiral has voluntarily resigned in disgrace. Whatever we have now, it's not working. In fact, the war games we play with Russia, we've war-gamed it, we lose all of them. We are simply not ready. So Pete Hegseth, my personal approval of him aside, he's someone I know, but setting that aside, Pete Hegseth is a change agent. And I genuinely don't know whether he's going to get everything right, or maybe he'll fail. I have a hard time believing Pete will fail. But what we cannot have under any circumstances is the status quo. And surprise, surprise, that's exactly what Elizabeth Warren wants.
In other words, you're quite sure that every general who serves should not go directly into the defense industry for 10 years. You're not willing to make that same pledge?
I'm not a general, Senator.
You'll be the one, let us just be clear, in charge of the generals.
Look, something you should understand about these senators, this is producer Matt who came up with this, and he's so right. These senators, they have staffers who write most of their questions. You think Elizabeth Warren really sat down and dug into Pete Hegseth or her background? Well, if you're a Democrat senator, you're really stuck these days because you have to hire Democrats out of college to come intern for you. Well, the Democrats you're getting out of college today are extra stupid and extra commie, so they don't know anything. So they'll write questions for you. You ask those questions on national television, and then with a quick little comeback from Pete Hegseth, you look like an idiot. Granted, that's Elizabeth Warren's specialty, but Elizabeth Warren, I doubt she's a believer in God. She should, however, get down on her knees tonight and thank him profusely because she's far from being the dumbest senator in the United States Senate. That award goes to now, and I think it'll go to her forever, one Mazie Hirono of Hawaii. Hawaii, my word. Seriously?
Will you resign as Secretary of Defense if you drink on the job? Which is a 24/7 position.
I've made this commitment on behalf of
will
the men and women I'm serving.
Will you resign as Secretary of Defense?
I've made
if
this
you
commitment on behalf
the
of the men and women I'm serving.
I'm not
because
hearing,
it's the most important deployment of my life.
I'm not hearing an answer to my question, so I'm going to move on. Would you carry out an order to shoot protesters
country,
in the legs?
I saw 50 Secret Service agents get injured
Secretary
by
Esper.
Rioters trying to jump over the fence.
Again,
set a church on fire and destroy
you know what,
a statue.
That sounds to me that you will chaos. Comply with such an order. You will shoot protesters in the leg. Moving on. President-elect has attacked our allies in recent weeks, refusing to rule out using military force to take over Greenland and the Panama Canal, and threatening to make Canada the 51st state. Would you carry out an order from President Trump to seize Greenland, a territory of our NATO ally, Denmark, by force, or would you comply with an order to take over the Panama Canal?
Senator, I will emphasize that President Trump received 77 million votes to be the lawful commander-in-chief
of this country.
We're not
talking about the election. My question is, would you use our military to take over Greenland or an ally of Denmark?
Senator, one of the things that President Trump is so good at is never strategically tipping his hand. And so I would never in this public forum give one way or another direct what orders the president would give
me
in any context.
That sounds to me that you would contemplate carrying out such an order to basically invade Greenland. You will not enable our service members to seek reproductive care. So
I don't believe the federal government
should
be funding travel
for abortion. I'm not hearing answers to my questions, Mr. Chairman.
She's so dumb. But she's a United States Senator, and she's so dumb. And honestly, I'm not even sure if that was the most embarrassing part of the day for Democrats. Kirsten Gillibrand is, she's something else.
You will have to change how you see women to do this job well, and I don't know if you are capable of that. You've denigrated active duty service members. We have hundreds of women who are currently in the infantry, lethal members of our military serving in the infantry, but you degrade them. You say, we need moms, but not in the military, especially in combat units. So please explain these types of statements, because they're brutal and they're mean, and they disrespect men and women who are willing to die for this country. You cannot denigrate women in general, and your statements do that. We don't want women in the military, especially in combat. What a terrible statement. So women you have denigrated. You have also denigrated members of the LGBTQ community. To denigrate LGBTQ service members is a mistake. If you are a sharpshooter, you're as lethal regardless of what your gender identity is, regardless of who you love. The statements you said about people who have views differently than you, that we're the enemy, are you saying that 50% of the DOD, if they hold liberal views or leftist views or are Democrats, are not welcome in the military? Are you saying that?
Senator, I volunteered to deploy to Afghanistan under Democrat President Barack Obama. I also volunteered to guard the inauguration of Joe Biden, but was denied the opportunity to serve because I was identified as an extremist by my own unit for a Christian tattoo.
Embarrassing. But I didn't want to end on that note. You see, we've been interviewing senator after senator, and I've been talking to them privately, and I don't know if you've noticed, if you've been watching I'm Right regularly, which of course you have, the senators all seem to be saying that all of Trump's nominees are going to go through, every one of them, to a man. They're going to go through. They're all going to get approved. In fact, even the weenies, the sissies, publicly, they're running to the news saying, no, I think they're all going to go through. In fact, I saw Senator Joni Ernst today kind of changing her tune from earlier, singing Pete Hegseth's praises.
I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record a letter submitted by Mr. Mark Lucas, who is a fellow Iowan and Iowa Army National Guard member. Mr. Lucas and I served together in the Iowa Army National Guard. He succeeded Pete Hegseth as Executive Director of Concerned Veterans for America. And in his letter, Mr. Lucas says that Mr. Hegseth, quote, laid a strong foundation that postured CVA for long-term success, end quote. And that Mr. Hegseth, quote, continued to be an invaluable asset to both me as a leader and the organization, end quote. So I would ask for unanimous consent to enter this Washington Times article and the letter from Mr. Mark Lucas into the record.
Wow. She's being super helpful. All these super sissy senators are even on board now. Oh, they're all going to get confirmed. So what changed? What happened? You happened. Give yourself a lot of credit. You were the reason the GOP Senate is probably just going to stamp an approval on all these Trump nominees. You see, Joni Ernst and the losers like her, they decided they were going to try to pull a fast one and do the deep state's bidding and try to handicap these nominees. And they started running their mouths publicly. Well, I'm not really sure if we can support him. Well, I don't really know. I am a senator. I'm very important. And they had venom poured on them from you, from the public. The public said, you better confirm these people or we're coming for your Senate seats. And what do you know? A couple weeks of that venom, and they're all on the team now. Let this be a lesson to you, me, all of us. Bully your local GOPer into doing what's right, because he never is going to have the guts to do it on his own. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. The great Congressman Chip Roy joins us in a moment. Before we do that, you don't have to bully Pure Talk into doing what's right. They've been doing it for a very long time. Pure Talk, their CEO did 2 tours in Vietnam. Oh, he wasn't stapling papers. Mac V. Sog. We're talking behind enemy lines stuff. That's the guy who runs Pure Talk. Why is it you never see Planned Parenthood donations from Pure Talk? Black Lives Matter. Why don't you see any of this DEI stuff? In fact, they even hire Americans. Who does that? A company staffed with patriots. That's who does that. That's why I love them. And they're on the same 5G network, so you don't sacrifice service. You'll save money, and it's quick and easy. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Now is the time to switch. We'll be back.
Are you aware of these emails being sent to offices?
Senator, you mentioned the word accountability, which is something we have not had for the last 4 years.
Are you aware of these messages being sent to offices?
Certainly I'm not aware of that. It's not one of my efforts, but there's been no accountability for the disaster of the withdrawal in Afghanistan, and that's precisely why we're here today.
Excuse me.
Is that leadership has been unwilling to take accountability. It's the time to restore that to our most senior ranks.
You've written publicly that DI policy is a distraction and have military personnel walking on eggshells.
Yeah, sounds good. Joining me now, great congressman from the state of Texas, Chip Roy. Okay, Chip, looked to me like Pete did pretty well today. I'm assuming he's gravy. The question is the other nominees, but I don't know. You tell me, you're inside the belly of the beast.
Well, I had to enjoy yesterday. The Washington Post put out a list of who they support and don't support, and they had four they didn't support, my good friend Russ Vogt being one and Pete Hegseth being one, which tells me those four are the ones to really go fight for, right? If the Post is opposing them, then we know those four are great. So it doesn't mean some of the others aren't good too, But look, Pete did a great job today from what I saw. I was able to watch maybe 30 to 45 minutes of the hearing while I was doing other things on the House side. But he pushed back hard on, the narrative that the Democrats are putting forward against him, pushed back on all of the, slander that's been levied at him. And I think he did a great job of that. But importantly, he made very clear that, he is he will be the soldier's secretary, right? He will be the guy that will be fighting for the guys that have actually been out there taking bullets, that have been on the front lines fighting for this country, not the brass, not the fat cats in Washington, not the K Street lobbyists who are the ones that have been driving our defense policy for too long, which, by the way, I hope he sends that message to Congress, because my colleagues have their head up their rear right now, and they're about to try to go do a deal with Democrats to pass a monster appropriations package rather than cutting spending and limiting the size and scope of government, which is no way to start things under the Trump administration.
Okay, you have to tell us all about that. What's happening right now?
Well, right now, the House Freedom Caucus, which gets maligned by my swamp creature Republican colleagues, we went and presented the administration and our colleagues in the House and the Senate what we believe was a reasonable approach to increase the debt ceiling, something like $4 trillion over 2 years, in exchange for guaranteeing that our border gets funded and secured, defense gets funded and secured, $200 billion for modernization, not DEI and woke garbage. And then importantly, that we start cutting Biden's garbage, right? EV mandates, cut the student loan fiasco and pay for those things. We wanted upfront cuts, and in exchange for that, secure the border, defense, and a debt ceiling increase for the president. But our swamp preacher colleagues are rejecting that. And instead, what they're talking about now is the monster big reconciliation package, which won't have the cuts in place that need to be put in place unless we fight for them. And importantly, they're now talking about taking the debt ceiling, probably 4 years and $10 trillion, attaching that to the appropriations package, plus funding for California, and put that all in one great big package, because that's the way swamp creatures think. I hope the president's team comes in and rejects that and tells them it's a bad idea. We need to change the way this town works, and that's not the way to do it.
Good grief. These people, none of these people care about the debt at all. Chip, do that. None of them, they're just going to keep going until the dollar just straight up collapses.
Yeah, and they literally have an excuse for everything. And their biggest excuse right now is that Chip Roy and the Freedom Caucus will never vote for a debt ceiling increase. Well, you know what? We put a proposal on the table. We did say we would vote to raise the debt ceiling, but only responsibly if we get cuts in the things that we need for this country. They want to continue like business as usual. I'm not going to stand for it. And I'm not going to be leveraged, by the way. I'm not going to let them put the border security on a monster big bill that doesn't cut spending and has K Street giveaways in the tax policy rather than doing what we need to do for the hardworking American. And right now, you know what that is? Getting rid of the inflation that's taxing the hardworking American family, getting rid of the health tax on the American people by having these big insurance companies screwing them. And so I'm going to stand up for the little guy in this country rather than what's going on in Washington.
Good. Some things never change. When is all this stuff coming, Chip?
Well, we put forward a proposal. We think we ought to do a two-bill approach. And look, by the way, I understand why the president says he might want a one-bill approach to try to get it all done together. I'd be happy to do that if my swamp creature friends weren't more for tax giveaways that won't go to deficit, reduce deficits and won't cut spending. But what I'm trying to do is get early wins so we can show unity and deliver for the president. Get the debt ceiling, get the border, get the defense, and so forth. But right now, the swamp creatures want to try to drive this train through in the next few weeks. I think that will harm the president's agenda. I think that will harm our unity. So I'm going to keep trying to, you know, convince these guys to do the right thing. There are a lot of us who want to do the right thing, and we'll keep working to do it.
Well, at least Joe Biden's all over it. He's sending the Secret Service down to the border. Here he was.
Look, let's get something in mind about the border. When I became president, the numbers came way down, number one. Number two, we had a circumstance where I pushed very hard for a bipartisan agreement to put more people on the border, more Secret Service agents. And guess what? He's on the phone saying, don't do it. Don't do it. Make me look bad.
Oh, Chip, this nightmare is, it's less than a week left, Chip. I don't know if I can take it. I might have to go to a cabin in the woods for a week. I can't do this anymore. It's so embarrassing.
Well, first of all, the first part of it was just a, you know, bald-faced lie. I mean, and Bill Malugin pointed out yesterday, he does great reporting for Fox on the border, but it's just straight up a lie. I mean, the numbers obviously skyrocketed under him. Your listeners and viewers know that. But that last stuff just shows you, you know, sharp as attack Joe Biden. Democrats knew what was going on. You know, last July, when I was initially calling for him to have to step aside of the 25th Amendment to be invoked, because I thought it should have to happen and Kamala Harris should have to own it. It was because of this. We've had this guy as the president since last July, and we shouldn't. And so, you know, look, here we are. Thank God President Trump won. We'll get busy on Monday. We'll swear him in, and we got to get busy working. But Congress needs to not stand in the way of the actual America First agenda, and I'm worried that they will. So my job is to try to highlight that and make clear what we're trying to actually do to advance the America First agenda.
Stay on them, Chip. Rooting for you. Come back soon. Appreciate it. Freaking Congress, as always. Kind of thing that can keep you up at night, unless you're taking your dream powder from Beam. Doesn't keep me up at night. Nothing keeps me up at night now, because when I feel like I'm maybe going to be too wired, not going to be able to sleep, I just have a cup of hot chocolate. It's delicious, hot chocolate. It's called dream powder. I warm up a little thing of milk, pour some dream powder in there, and I just sit and sip on it, only it has things in it, natural things, drug-free. It has natural things that just relax me and put me to sleep. I sleep like a baby. I sleep through the night, and I wake up ready to take on the day. Do you want that every night? You can take it every night. Try it. Up to 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Late last night, Jack Smith, the former special counsel, I guess I should say, released his investigative report on Donald Trump. Now, I'm going to allow Josh to correct me if I'm wrong, but releasing a report when you've dropped the entire thing is really just one last attempt at a public smear. But I want to hear what Josh has to say about it. He's the one who knows. Joining me now, my friend, host of America on Trial, and new father, Josh Hammer. Josh, why release the report?
Jesse, always great to join you, my good friend. So this is somewhat unusual insofar as, by the way, he's not merely former special counsel. He's former so-called special counsel, Jack Smith, because he's not actually a special counsel in the first place. I mean, Jack Smith is a special counsel, as one of my friends put it to me earlier today, the same way that the so-called Black Hebrew Israelites are Israelites. I mean, he is a fake special counsel, which is why he was dismissed from the Florida case by Judge Aileen Cannon in Florida back in July. Clarence Thomas in the Trump versus United States SCOTUS opinion back on July 1 had the same conclusion there. So he was illegitimate from the get-go there. But he ultimately faced reality and moved to withdraw both of his cases against Donald Trump in both Florida, the classified docs case at Mar-a-Lago, as well as the January 6, 2020 election case in D.C. there. And it is somewhat unusual to have a prosecutor who has moved to remove his own cases, who has not actually taken those cases to its logical conclusion. He has not taken it to a judge. He's not taken it to a jury. You've not gotten a guilt, an acquittal, a mistrial. There's been no result other than you moving to remove your own case. It is a little unusual to then have the ability to file a final report. So I was hoping that Judge Cannon and the other judges involved here might have just prevented this from happening in the first place there, because you basically forfeited your ability to do so, from my perspective, when you yourself, dude, moved to end these cases and terminate them there. But to your point, the reason that he's trying to do this there is because he's trying to write for the history books. He's trying to preserve the perceived legitimacy of his years-long legal jihad. He is trying to convince generations of high schoolers, of law students 10, 20, 30 years from now, that he was in the right and that you, the American people, the voter, were in the wrong. Unfortunately for Jack Smith, for Merrick Garland, for Joe Biden, frankly, unfortunately for Alvin Bragg, for Fannie Willis, for all the various tentacles of what I like to call the Democrat lawfare complex, unfortunately for them, history is written by the winners. History is not written by the losers. So Jack Smith is trying to write and make a play here for the history books, but he's fundamentally going to come up short, I think.
But did they lose, Josh? I mean, in the end, yes, Donald Trump won the election, of course, but Fannie Willis, you and I both know she's going to get reelected or even move up. Alvin Bragg, his sham trials in New York, they're not going to hurt Alvin Bragg's career. He's going to run on those, and he's going to be a senator, a governor, or something else. They didn't lose in the end, right?
Well, on an individual level, I mean, Fannie Willis in Fulton County, Georgia, you're right. I mean, that's Atlanta. That is a very, very blue jurisdiction these days. Alvin Bragg is in Manhattan. That is probably even further left, or maybe slightly less left, but similar. But I think they lost, Jesse, kind of zooming out insofar as they lost the election. I mean, they lost what they were purportedly trying to do, which was to try to derail Donald Trump's primary campaign in the GOP primary, and more to the point, to make sure that he would not be elected as the 47th president of the United States. That above all is what they were trying to do there. And once upon a time, in the eyes of the mainstream legal commentariat there, they viewed a lot of these cases as open and shut, ironclad cases. The way that MSNBC, CNN, New York Times, so forth, the way that they used to talk about the case in Washington, D.C. in particular, the marquee case of the Democrat lawfare complex, the January 6, 2020 case there, they were saying that this was the safest thing imaginable, or the safest thing at least in decades there. And it all fell apart. Not only did it all fall apart, but it had the reverse effect. It had the effect of boosting Donald Trump in the primary over his primary competitors, and it had the effect of boosting him in the general election as well. The American people were not having it with this lawfare. So yes, they have succeeded to an extent insofar as they have set an extraordinarily dangerous precedent. We have crossed not merely the Rubicon, we've crossed, frankly, the Atlantic Ocean at this point there when it comes to trying to turn America into a third world sub-Saharan Africa tin pot dictatorship. I'm not sure when we're going to get back from that abyss anytime soon or anything there, but they fundamentally have lost when it comes to their overall number one mission to derail Donald Trump.
Okay, what about this case against Hunter Biden? David Weiss released his final report. What are we supposed to make of all this?
Well, David Weiss is basically excoriating Joe Biden here for having the temerity to criticize the Justice Department. Now, this case was interesting from the get-go, right? So David Weiss was the special counsel on Hunter Biden. He was also the U.S. attorney for Delaware, which, by the way, is kind of odd because a sitting active U.S. attorney is not supposed to actually be a special counsel. The DOJ has protocols that purportedly exist to prevent exactly that from happening. No one seemed to care, which, as a lawyer, I continue to find a little odd there. But David Weiss did pursue the gun case against Hunter Biden in Delaware through to a conviction. He almost assuredly was going to be able to get a conviction out in Los Angeles as well, before they ultimately got that plea deal the week that trial in Los Angeles in September was about to get started there. And then we all, you know, look, the whole world saw what Joe Biden did. I mean, he reversed his, you know, approximately 5,000 times that he said he was not going to pardon his son. He reversed all that in the blink of an eye there. He pardons his son. And then he says that the Justice Department handled this in an improper and politicized manner. I'm sorry, Mr. President, when Donald Trump was saying the exact same thing about former so-called special counsel Jack Smith, when Donald Trump was saying all those exact same things, Joe Biden was saying, oh, he's sowing the seeds of discord in the justice system. Oh, he's trying to destabilize the Constitution, fascist, tyrant, Hitler, Nazi, whatever there. So surely what's good for the goose is good for the gander there. So that's basically a little bit of what David Weiss has here in his report. He's basically saying, Mr. President, I mean, look, you have the pardon power. In theory, you can do what you want, even if it is something as venal and corrupt and self-dealing and grossly cynical as the Hunter Biden pardon. You theoretically have that power within your legitimate constitutional authority, but don't do what you criticize your opponent of doing insofar as trying to criticize the Justice Department. In this case, it's doubly embarrassing because it's actually Joe Biden's own Justice Department. If you really cared that much, you could have fired David Weiss, special counsel, and prevented it from getting to this point.
Josh, how did those two get crossways? Because David Weiss may have done all that, but David Weiss was obviously put there to run cover for Hunter, yep. Gave him a sweetheart deal that was going to get through in Delaware, if not for a judge. And now those two are taking little pot shots like high school girls at each other. Is it just because Joe Biden called him politicized?
Well, you're totally right. So just to be clear here, David Weiss, he brought two prosecutions against Hunter Biden. There was this gun case involving this revolver that Hunter Biden literally wrote about in his book. I mean, first of all, what a moron you have to be to literally admit to a federal crime in an actual book. You actually had prosecutors reading from Hunter Biden's book at that trial. I'm serious, Jesse. How stupid do you have to be, right? So, I mean, he brought this gun case against Hunter Biden in Delaware, and then he brought this tax case out in Los Angeles, which was similarly ironclad before they reached a plea deal, but he deliberately slow walked everything else. So FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which Hunter Biden was guilty as a clam of violating on behalf of Burisma and Ukraine in particular, arguably also Romania, China, maybe other countries as well, but definitely Ukraine. FARA has a 5-year statute of limitations, and David Weiss slow walked the crap out of his investigation there. It seemed to many of us like he was trying to slow walk away that 5-year statute of limitations so as to basically try to land the Hunter Biden plane safely, so to speak, there. So you're totally right there. But yeah, but now they're at odds there because Joe Biden, if I can psychoanalyze Joe Biden just for a second here. You know, he has the fragile ego of a kindergartner. This is someone who is the oldest president in American history, but he has the ego of someone who is like 1/20th or a 30th or whatever of his age. If you criticize Joe Biden at all there, he is going to lash out at you. He has an infamous temper. He cannot stand being criticized whatsoever there. So that's basically, I think, where this is coming from. But you're totally right. David Weiss was trying to help Joe Biden. And I guess he has now found out what happens when you try to help a man as fickle and frankly irascible as Joe Biden.
Irascible. That's a great word. I'm going to figure out how to use that word. And I'm going to say it in a sentence later on today. All right, Josh, finally, I saw the Washington Post, one of the more despicable papers in the United States of America. They put out the list of Trump nominees they approve of and disapprove of. And one of the ones they approved of concerns me, Josh, because it's the Washington Post, and because in my mind there is nothing more important than the DOJ stopping the government protection racket it has become. Pam Bondi got a big fat thumbs up from the Washington Post. Now, everybody I talk to speaks highly of Pam Bondi. I'm not here to trash her reputation, but if the Washington Post likes her, Josh, I have concerns.
Jesse, look, I mean, Pam Bondi would not have been my number one pick, if I'm being very candid with you. She is not who I would have personally advised Donald Trump to pick for attorney general there. But she's perfectly serviceable. I mean, she's going to do a perfectly fine job there. You know, she was a 2-term attorney general of my state, the state of Florida, and she was a leading conservative crusader during her years as state attorney general. She was one of the tips of the spears against Obamacare back when that was a fight. She actually fought pretty courageously, if memory serves, on the same-sex marriage issue as well, before the Supreme Court took that off the table in the Obergefell case of 2015 there. My only objection to Pam Bondi is that I think she's somewhat of yesterday's news. She was Attorney General of Florida, if memory serves, from 2011 to 2019 there. I would have encouraged to go with a slightly younger spruce your pick, someone who maybe is a sitting current active attorney general, someone like a Ken Paxton in Texas or something like that there. But she's perfectly fine. I have no actual objections to Pam Bondi. She actually was a registered agent of the Qatari government years ago. I'm told that that is well in the past. It's no longer an issue, thank God, because that actually would have been troublesome, but I'm told it's no longer an issue there. The Washington Post, I'm not entirely sure why they're giving her a thumbs up. I mean, you know, she probably does not agree with them on the overwhelming majority of issues. Maybe it is the Qatar connection, frankly, because the Washington Post does take a lot of Qatari money. So maybe that is actually what's going on there, but I can't really figure out what else might be going on.
Josh, thank you, my friend. Enjoy your new baby.
Thanks.
All right. What's it like on the ground? California wildfires can't be good. Let's find out next.
That's when I saw this, and I really want to show you this because I hadn't noticed it before, but I started looking for this hose and it was extended over my yard. Somebody had taken the garden hose from the front yard and they had stood there before I had arrived, and they had tried to extinguish, or maybe they had extinguished, the fire that burnt this part of the fence and the fire that was burning these trees. Some neighbor, who I don't know, I still don't know who did it to this day, had put out the fire at my house.
Pretty awesome. You know, there's plenty of stories of dirt balls and turds looting and things like that out there, but there are plenty of stories of some wonderful people doing wonderful things. Joining me now, at least one of those wonderful people, Jennifer, we're not really sure about her, Joel Pollack, senior editor at large for Breitbart News, and Jennifer Gilardi, visiting fellow from the Independent Women's Forum. Joel, that's your house. I keep hearing wonderful things about wonderful people out there, and I like to hear it.
Well, Jesse, the house behind me is not my house. The house on the cliff is my house. My house is about 400 yards that way. This is a house on a neighboring street, and the only reason I'm setting up here is because I know I have good reception here. It's very hard to get services and reception at the moment because of the destruction that you can see around me, but this is my neighborhood, and I'd say probably about 85% to 90% of the homes have been destroyed.
God have mercy. Jen, you lived there for a very long time, 20 years, you finally left. How surreal is it to look at all those videos, all those images, and it's just gone? I mean, I've been to that area so many times, it's amazing to see it ugly. It's the most beautiful place I've ever seen.
It really is, and first, I want to extend my sympathies to Joel and everybody who has lost so much their friends. Miraculously, my friends, condo building is still standing, so there has been some grace given by God, thank the Lord, and very grateful for that, and I know it's still going to be a long road. But yeah, Jesse, I think I heard you say on Megyn Kelly's podcast is that people like to dump all over California. I mean, with good reason. Our leadership has completely driven the state into the ground. And, you know, I wasn't very political in California because I didn't need to be, right? It was an easy place to live without a lot of money. Not everybody that lives there is a wealthy millionaire, right? The lifestyle, it's why the homeless are all there. You didn't need $1 million. And then COVID really hit and I was like, what is going on? And I started to understand kind of before this fire, what bad policy looks like and the destruction it wrecks on people. And, you know, Gavin Newsom, I'm not so sure that people are going to wake up. I mean, he did this during COVID and that wasn't enough. So maybe this will be it. But, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for these people to realize that voting has consequences.
Joel, you're there, obviously. What is the mood on the ground of the people? I've been in natural disasters plenty of times myself before. There's always sadness. There's always anger there. If there is anger, who are they angry at? What's the mood of the people?
Well, right now, I'm one of the only people who lives in Pacific Palisades who is actually in Pacific Palisades, because the only people they allow up here right now are police, fire, and journalists. And most of the journalists are from international or national outlets. It just so happens that two Breitbart News people live in Pacific Palisades. and one lives over in Brentwood, and he had to evacuate. But my colleague John Kahn lost his house. He lives about a mile in that direction, and my house is still standing about a quarter mile behind me. But on the ground, in terms of people who have been evacuated, the mood is obviously grief, but also frustration because they can't come up here yet. It's not safe for large numbers of people. I found a fire in the front yard of a house near mine just this morning because a local resident asked me to take a photograph of their now ruined house, and they sent me to an address, and I went there, and there was a fire in the front yard. This is still a burning fire, even though it looked like it's mostly out. There are hot spots that are still dangerous, but people are frustrated. They want to be able to have closure or to get back into their homes if their homes are standing. And there's some anger at Governor Gavin Newsom, at Mayor Karen Bass. She was out of the country when the wildfires hit. She knew there was an extreme wind event coming, but she did not get emergency personnel in place. Fire department did not pre-deploy because they didn't have the money to pay overtime. You think how much money would have been saved had they just put the firefighters out and paid the overtime? Look how many billions of dollars have been destroyed for maybe, what, $1 million in overtime for 24 hours? So there's a lot of anger. At the same time, there is a lot of hope. The public school, which is just uphill behind me, it burnt down, but what survived was the school logo, which is a seagull in front of a rainbow, and that rainbow is giving people hope, very much like the biblical rainbow after the flood. It's a symbol of hope that the community is embracing, and people do want to rebuild. People are helping each other. It's like the random neighbor who put out the fire on my fence before I got there. People in Palisades are like that, and that spirit continues, but there's a lot of pain and frustration and anger.
Yeah. Jen, I know you have a bunch of friends still there, and I know you've got a bunch of fruitcake friends still there. Where are they at in all this?
Well, the ones with any common sense, like Joel said, are angry. They want accountability. They want a change. They hope other people wake up. But this is the liberal, we've talked about this almost ad nauseum now, this mindset that, you know, there were many responses to a piece I wrote in the Federalist, you know, holding Governor Gavin Newsom accountable, everything Joel said, Karen Bass was in Ghana doing God knows what. And they're saying now is not the time for politicizing. Now is not the time for pointing fingers and casting blame. Now is the time for compassion. And you know what? How is it compassionate to sit there from behind your computer in your flat in Brooklyn and post like, this is where you can get help? To me, that is like the ultimate narcissism, to think someone's going to come to my social media platform to figure out how to get help. Nobody was coming. Like, my friends in the Palisades were not asking me. They have resources. But they love to preach from above, pointing out all the moral failures of all those less virtuous than they are, and do nothing except post nice words on social media. You know, they pat themselves on the back for all their compassion about where to find help or where to donate. And meanwhile, the actual victims who lost everything are as upset and angry as I am. And anger can be beneficial. It prompts change and it, you know, it moves people to act. Yet the morally superior, it's not helpful in any way. And they know the right way to respond to the crisis. And they're going to sympathy shame you until you feel the way they feel. And, you know, one person even used my religion against me and saying, what would Jesus do? And I was like, first of all, you're not Christian, so you have no idea what Jesus would do, you know, and maybe you should get out from behind your computer and go help in the ways that you can. But they don't. They just make other people try to feel bad.
Joel, Jen, wishing you both the very best. Joel, reach out, text me if you need anything, my brother. Jen, not you. All right, you guys, I appreciate you very much. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And before we do that, if you want more videos like this, you can go get them. They're all over my YouTube page. And it's free. You just go subscribe to the YouTube page, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC, or just scan that little thing right there on your phone. And you're good to go. Now, I made a mistake, and I bought nice luggage a while ago. Well, here I was talking about it.
there is one thing you should not spend the money on. Luggage. We each carried throughout our life the luggage we brought into the marriage. We each had one big bag and one kind of small carry-on bag. And you know what it's like. You mix and match. We were not worried about... Well, finally, the wheels were starting to go a little cattywampus and things are going bad on the luggage. And we decided, hey, you get what you pay for. Let's go out and get a set of good luggage. That way it'll last us. Very first trip with the good luggage. It broke. And it didn't break in just a weird way or in a normal way. It broke. The latches didn't open. I had to get a hammer to open up the luggage. So listen to me. I went home. I went online. I found a coupon. Gosh, I sound like Chris. And I spent $68 for one of the big bags. And I got a big bag. And it has lasted me another 3 years. It's a complete piece of crap. Zip up. You wouldn't look at it twice. Don't ever spend money on luggage. A complete ripoff.
It's a fact. I just saved you some money. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.